You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 515. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Time has no meaning. The world is careening into
the abyss,
into a big fucking virusy abyss. And yet here we are. We persist on the show that won't die. So joining me, that was John Gentile out of Philadelphia. The radioactive wasteland, formerly known as Philadelphia. Hello, John.
Adam, you saw that tagline from the Sonic Attack, where I refer to Jersey City as the nuclear waste zone, the demilitary nuclearized waste zone featuring the Shogun, Christoph Jesus.
I totally was referencing that thing that you just said. How you doing?
Obviously, I think everybody will pick up on that.
Yeah. How's it going I hear John, you rigged an election or something, right?
Philadelphia saved the world, baby. Philly saved the world.
From what I hear on the internet, from reliable sources on the internet, because I have John in Philadelphia here on the podcast, and then the other one over there is Tom Trauma in Michigan, and as I understand it, both of you were just shredding ballots and flooding,
Our motto here in Michigan, Adam, is vote early, vote often.
I mean, that's how we get it done. As an international observer, I commend you on the amount of chaos that the two of you have caused for not just your nation, but the world.
So you mentioned the COVID thing. Is it getting bad in Canada again?
Oh God, it depends where you are.
Even under their masterful leadership, as opposed to our horrid leadership, makes you wonder.
Well, it depends. Anyway. It depends whose masterful leadership. It's actually very strange how the masterful leadership in Ontario decides, which rules they want to follow at which times. So like if you happen to live in Atlantic Canada, any of the maritime provinces, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, Newfoundland, that area. Those places
sports potatoes.
PEI is, yes. But anyways, that area is they have a mutual like travel bubble between the three of them that everyone in the rest of Canada calls the Atlantic bubble. And we're not allowed in there. I don't exactly know how they're enforcing this, but we're not allowed to go there.
Or they'll shoot you at the border.
Right. But they have they've been doing really good there, and they have incredibly low numbers and low transmission and stuff like that. Ontario, we were doing
their gonorrhea, however, in the Maritime District is through the roof.
Oh, and they probably all have scurvy, right? Because they're sailor folk. But the Ontario, like, we were doing really, really good, and then like we totally like second wave super bounced at right about when the kids started going back to school, so like early September. So I don't know, like right now it's like Ontario was like 1,500 new cases a day, 1,200 new cases a day, something like that. The projection came out today that said we could be like 6,000 new cases a day by December, which is bad. Manitoba won over from us. They just they've locked down the entire province right now, so they're in some sort of like either they're calling it like a circuit breaker lockdown, which I don't exactly know what that means, but it sounds awesome. It's like a Judge Dredd thing. So yeah, it depends where you are. It's all various manners of fucked here. It's weird because I hear it from both sides in Ontario, where by both sides, I mean, people who are small business owners and then people on the internet who are really my two circles. And the people who are small business owners are kind of like, if we get locked down again, we're all going to lose our businesses and that would be bad. And that's kind of what the premier here is trying to prevent. But then on the other hand, people on the internet are like, if we don't lock down for the sake of the small businesses, we're all kind of fucked. And I can kind of see both sides. So what I think we're seeing here is we're all kind of fucked.
There you go.
Yeah. You know, what are you going to do though? Right.
Hey, listen,
we're all
get out and die. Save the planet. Get out and die. Everybody talks about overpopulation. Do your part. Go out and die.
Yeah, and then there'll be mammoths will come back and it'll just be like there a paradise. So anyways,
it will be the fuel that fuels the, you know, internal combustion engines.
Oh God. Like some future, like, you know, I don't know what the future beings on this planet are going to have evolved from, like beavers, I guess, is like, they're going to make such beautiful oil.
All I know is they're going to wear jumpsuits. There's always jumpsuits in the
future. But they're going to process my corpse into a beautiful fuel that they'll just use
there for
their future beaver cars. So anyways, that's where we are. We're all fucked. So this is the Punk News Podcast. We talk about punk rock and things, I guess. If you want to send us mail, you do that at podcast@punknews.org with your email program. John, is there any mail that we want to talk about this week?
Yes, this is from Greg, and here's what Greg has to say. Dear Punk News Podcast, now that the election is over, will you stop talking about politics? Please and thank you. From Greg.
Okay.
I will, gladly. Stop talking about it before the election.
I'll give you it, Greg. I don't really want to talk about it right now. You know what? I've kind of figured that, like, my secret plan is to publish these episodes just ever so late that any commentary that we could possibly have is irrelevant and annoying.
Is it way? Are you way behind again? Are we way behind again?
Yeah, I'm a couple behind. But you know what? It's a pandemic, so fuck you, listener.
You did get my Alice Cooper, I want to be elected in before the election, which I appreciated, Adam.
Oh, did I? Okay, that's good. I don't know. I don't want to talk about politics. Stop making your politics so, consequencing.
Well, a lot of that's hyperbole, Adam. But here's what I don't like. Here's what I feel like. You ever watch like the Amish, where the Amish just drive around their horse and buggies and they're like, we don't care about the affairs of the English, which is everyone who's not Amish. That's what I feel like. Like, I don't care about the affairs of the English. I don't care about these people anymore.
Except for that's not true with the Amish at all, though.
They don't vote. I mean, I vote, but they don't vote. They just.
Sometimes they do, actually. Like, that's not true. You know what I mean? Like,
well, maybe
like,
those Pennsylvania Amish, they probably vote 6 or 8 times. But I'm saying the Michigan Amish and like the Northern Indiana Amish, they don't participate in the political process.
I can't speak to them. Anyway, the Amish are more complex and more aware than most people. If you ever seen the movie
people's political beliefs, right, John? They're more nuanced and complicated than people like to give credit.
Anyway. If you see the movie Witness starring Harrison Ford, excellent movie, not exactly accurate of the Amish. Also, let's talk about Witness real quick. Great movie. But man, I mean, Harrison Ford is a real bumbler in that movie. Like, this kid sees some guy get killed in front of him, and Harrison Ford that night is driving the kid around saying, is this the murder? Is that the murder? Then Harrison Ford goes to the Amish people's houses, and he brings the murders after them. Then Harrison Ford bangs the Amish lady, and that gives her a lot of problems because, you know, that's the whole thing that's, like, not cool with the Amish. Harrison Ford, great actor, but he really screwed that detective operation, let me tell you.
It's one of the tenets of the Amish lifestyle is that you cannot have sex with Harrison Ford.
And it's only violated every once in a while.
That Harrison Ford, he's a charming bastard when he was younger.
Well, listen, you can always use that podcast at punknews.org. We love getting your mail. That's what we got for this week, boys.
I don't come on very often anymore. So I always expect like if there's any hate mail, like what you're gonna like jump, surprise me with some hate mail, but I guess I appreciate the lack of hate mail.
You got mentioned last week. One of the writers like that we fight about Danzig from Germany. No,
yes. You know who else loves that? Adam. He doesn't, but he doth think he doth protest too much or something.
Yeah, we got fan mail from Germany, Tom. Germany.
I went to a brewery. While back in Muncie, Indiana, which has all these little weird little breweries, but they had a pizza that had a lyric from a Danzig song, and I couldn't, and it was like a hot, like a spicy, and I couldn't get it, John. Like, I couldn't draw it up. It was, what the hell was it? It was Souls on Ice. Or I can't remember. It was for the first album, but I couldn't get the song. I had to Google it. I was so disappointed in myself. Soul's on fire. Yeah, I had to Google it, and it bothered me so much that I couldn't displace it.
When it's that time, let's listen to more Danzig, which we all should do. Listen to more Danzig. Adam, have you ever listened to a Danzig album in full?
Yeah, I have. I don't. Okay. I don't recall anything.
It's probably five.
No, you know what? There was one Halloween where I decided that a really good idea as I gave out candy would be to stand at my front door and just like burn through like the first three Danzig records.
Oh, there you go.
And I did
publicly expose yourself to.
I enjoyed myself, but I couldn't tell you what actually happened on any of them.
Yeah, fair enough.
Which is really my, it's my problem. It's not Danzig. Let's be clear.
The first two albums are so good, especially the second one. Anyway,
Danzig seems like the kind of person that you would want to name a pizza after.
I always wanted to have like a bulldog or something named Danzig.
How would you feel that name the kids after Danzig in the Danzig Facebook group? That's weird and creepy.
Really? I haven't seen that. They named their kids after?
Like this one guy, I'm going to name my kid Glenn Danzig. And I'm like, you know what? Let your kid be his own thing. And then the guy got like really mad about it.
Well, you probably shouldn't have done that, John, because his first choice was probably Adolf Hitler. But I don't know, man. I don't see those posts in the Danzig group much. I wonder if I got kicked out or if I can't stand to be on social media much. So I don't know. What about that guy from Brazil, John? That looks like he's 500 pounds, all muscle. You see that guy?
I haven't seen that guy lately, but that guy is something else, man.
I'm sort of scared of that guy. But anyway, all right. What are we talking about tonight, folks?
I don't know. Well, okay. So I guess we should tackle this. We're going to tackle this first story. I think before we get into anything, and it is it is a sad one. But let's do it right now. So earlier this week, Alec from Leftover Crack, Alec Bale, is it Bailey?
Actually, most people pronounce it Bailey, but like the Irish. I mean, his name's not Irish, but like the Irish name Bailey. So I think that's close to. I think it's actually more like Bailey, but I think it's Bailey is how most people say.
There's no better time to mangle someone's last name than during their obituary. But anyways, Alec from Leftover Crack and Choking Victim recently passed away. So he had played in Leftover Crack since its inception. So he had also been a member of Choking Victim. Before Choking Victim, he was in No Commercial Value. He was in Agent 99. He was in that whole family of crack rock steady bands. So, of course, our condolences go to Alec's family and his friends and fans. And Leftover Crack released a statement. So I'm gonna read you a bit of that. They said, "It is with a heavy heart that we regret to share the passing of our bandmate, bass player, and friend Alec Bailey, on Tuesday morning. Along with guitarist, vocalist Scott Sturgeon, Alec was a co-founding member of the bands No Commercial Value and the Crack Rock Steady Seven. Most notably are his contributions to the bands Choking Victim and Leftover Crack, co-writer of many songs such as Five Finger Discount, Fuck America, Operation Move, Nazi White Trash, and Life is Pain. His work over the course of time enabled him to travel the world, along with his bandmates Brad Logan, Don Morris, Ezra Kyer, and Al Rosenberg. He was a brother to us and endeared himself to those who he worked with over the past 25 years. This loss cuts so deep that we are left in a state of shock and confusion as to how to proceed forward. In these hardest of times, it is easy to lose sight of the goodness in people and the world, and too easy to fall prey to the depression and pitfalls that can join it. We ask for people to please keep his family and friends in your hearts right now and allow each of us and each other the kindness and space to process this painful loss." So there's some more. You can read all that on Punk News right now. They link off to a number of community resources after their statement. The Suicide Hotline, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, among them. So that was Leftover Crack statement there. John, I kind of want to throw this to you because I mean, it was revealed. I'm not sure if it was supposed to be not too long ago that you were involved in a Leftover Crack project. Does this, how's this hit you? How does this impact you?
I don't know if I want to spill the beans too much, but I'll give the list. With regards to that leftover crack project, the irony, and I don't mean this like the sad irony, is that we were essentially almost done. And parts of that project, of course, dealt with the deaths of others, which was difficult for some of the members of the band, like even talking about that. And so now this death, in a way, caps off an era of the band. It certainly does cap off an era of the band. The three main leftover crack guys are Sturgeon, Brad, and Alec. And so I know the remaining members are in shock and are really, really taking this hard because the death was not expected. The answer is that project. I don't want to make this about me or my project, but I mean, it's a fair question. That project is still in the works. It's somewhat more complicated. But as of right now, I think the band members' main concern is how they're feeling, how people close to Alec are feeling. And I know a lot of people are shooken up and were very taken aback by this news. I don't know, Adam. Am I being vague? I don't know.
No, I mean, I wasn't sure. I mean, your project was talked about a little bit during 500, but that episode was 6 hours long, so who knows what the hell even happened, on hour four of it. I assume that like you've spoken to him then, right? Like you were in touch with him.
I've spoken to them. Yes.
Yeah. So just, I don't know. Just, I mean, so even like project aside, like did this was, I assume, as out of left field for you as everyone else then.
The answer is no one knows what's going to happen. And some people were saying this, and some people were saying X is going to happen. Some people were saying Y is going to happen, but none of that, understandably, none of that really means anything because people are literally in a state of shock. So with regards to what the band's going to do going forward, we're really just going to have to wait and see. And a sad thing about Leftover Crack is there has been death in the band multiple times. This death, I don't say one death is more important than the other, but this is the death of one of the longest serving members, you know, not someone that was in the band briefly. So they've dealt with a lot of death in this band. Probably more than most bands. I mean, let's see, more than the Rolling Stones, more than the Beatles, more than Aerosmith, you know, a lot of unexpected death in this band, which is sad and tough for them. And I don't really have any words of wisdom except for, you know, they offered some links, which are some important links. And one other thing is sometimes people are a little hard on Leftover Crack, I think. But I think it's important to understand where they're coming from and their perspective, and maybe just shed some light into what their world perspective is and why sometimes their world perspective is extremely dark and sometimes it's not. But, this is a darker side of the band. And when you understand these kinds of things, you can really understand why some people in the band act certain ways, and it makes sense and it's understandable. Am I being vague? I don't know, Adam. Sorry.
I don't know. It's a hard thing to grapple with. And I'm not expecting you
I have to be a little vague because I can't like say certain things right now. You know what I mean? But it's sad and they're in shock. And that band fights a lot. That band fights probably way more than most bands, almost any band. But they're also extremely close too, you know. And it's not like the Ramones where they kind of hated each other but worked together anyways. It is very much like, I mean, I've never had a brother, but I would say it's like some brotherly relationships where they're always fighting, but doesn't mean they don't care about and love each other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get that.
Sure.
Tommy, you want to jump in on this at all, or are you?
Unfortunately, I really don't really have any insight on this, or I'm not even really into the band at all. You go through social media, whatever, and you see all these people that are trying to sort of exploit this for their own, like, whatever. I don't have anything to say. Sorry.
No,
that's it. I just don't know. I mean, it sucks. As a young guy, when they run, you know, suicide hotlines and drug counseling hotline numbers afterwards, it's not too difficult to put two and two together. It just sucks. It's a tough year for everybody. And, you know, man, hang in there, everybody. Hang in there.
Yeah, that's what I kept thinking is I felt like this is you know, you can't describe too much of a reason to what happened without knowing, right? And you don't want to, you know, you don't want to speculate too much, but
yeah, I'm not speculating.
But man, like this year has just been like a grind for people that normally have like the soundest of constitutions. And
even normal people like us that, you know, just sort of are much less affected by the change in the way things are, that have still been working and still been paying our bills. And I can't imagine the extra stress of, you know, people who aren't able to go out and make a living and do what they want to do. So,
let me cap this off with somewhat, well, I don't want to say positive. It's sad that Alec has passed away. A lot of people,
How old was he, John? Mid 40s?
About 50, maybe late 40s, right around there. You can measure a person by their friends, which is probably a true statement. But you know, he's passed away, which is very sad. But at least he did create some incredible art. I would say the Choking Victim album. Alec isn't on the Choking Victim album, but he's on the Sevens before that. But he helped write some of those songs. Choking Victim, the Three Left Over Crack albums, some of the greatest punk rock ever made, I will say for sure. Some of those clever, funny, interesting, deep, and also sometimes bubblegum punk ever made. Definitely Left Over Crack. Let's play Left Over Crack track. This is an Alec Central track. And sometimes he would sing some of these cool. If you got to see Left Over Crack live, it was cool. Sometimes Alec would take lead vocal on certain songs. And I don't even know if there's any rhyme or reason to why he took certain songs, but this is one that he had a couple of times, at least in one that he helped write. Nazi White Trash, Left Over Crack, classic. Left Over Crack, Nazi White Trash, Alec, R.I.P.
We're back. That was Left Over Crack. We're going to talk about some of the news that happened this week. This first one is a quirky one, and John threw it at us just at the last minute before we started recording here. But Hot Water Music, the much beloved Gainesville, No Idea era punk band. I don't know what I'm trying to say. People know who Hot Water Music is. They put out a cover on I believe it was Halloween was they put it out on or
yes right around Halloween? There
it seems like the kind of weird cover that people put out in and around them. No, it wasn't. It was released on November 9th. So what do I know?
Anyway, close enough to Halloween.
Close enough.
That's Halloween in Sweden, November 9th.
Yeah, it's like Orthodox Halloween. So. So Hot Water Music, they put out a cover of Stevie Wonder's 1976 classic Sir Duke. Now the cover features a JR of Les and Jake playing saxophone on the song. The you can stream it off the band's Bandcamp page right now. Now Hot Water Music last released the Light It Up LP in 2017 on Rise Records, but this really demands that you go listen to it. If for no other reason, then it's like really playful and quirky, and that is not two adjectives that I would use to describe Hot Water Music most of the time. John, what you are famously not a person of the era that gives too much of a crap about Hot Water Music. So, why is this? Why is this right up? Why was this your thing to bring up here?
I was stunned by this release. Perhaps I've been too unkind to Hot Water Music in the past. It just really isn't my bag. Doesn't mean that it's bad. But listen, Stevie Wonder is one of these artists. And listen, I'm a massive Stevie Wonder fan. I've got pretty much every single album he put out. He's put out a lot of albums. I've got all the albums from the 60s, all the albums from the 70s, all the albums from the 80s. The five classic ones, Fulfilling This Is First Finale, Inner Visions, Talking Book. I've got all the – I adore those records. And, of course, Sir Duke is on Songs of the King of Life, the famous double album, Songs of the Key of Life. So Stevie Wonder is an artist that basically most artists should not cover. Unless your name is George Clinton or Prince, you probably should not be covering – Stevie Wonder, maybe somebody like Janelle Monáe or somebody, but I mean Stevie Wonder. There's such sensitivity to his music, and I don't mean like quietness. I mean there's such a sense of feeling and control and atmosphere and feeling. The slightest change to the slightest note makes a difference in a Stevie Wonder song, and Stevie Wonder is a master at that emotion and at that style. And that is, you know, the Ramones. You can blast out the Ramones and do a pretty good job. But with Stevie Wonder, there's such a touch to the music, such a gentle touch, which is a fine touch. It's really hard to cover and do it well, really hard to do. So with this Hot Water Music cover, I was stunned in that, like, I'm honestly not trying to be a dick here. Is this supposed to be funny? Like, because if it's supposed to be funny, then I think it's hilarious. If it's supposed to be like a genuine track, like I'm listening to this, it just sounds like some wasted guy at karaoke trying to do Sir Duke and like nailing half the lines, you know, and like the other half just like if I play this for my mom would be like, why listen to this drunk guy sing Stevie Wonder song? You know what I mean? And the other weird thing about this track is like every like, I don't know, 30 seconds or like minute in the song, they'll have like a heavy metal like out of nowhere. And it's like, why is that there? You know, so it's like almost a standard cover, but they don't want to quite commit to it. So they put like a heavy metal smash in there. And I hate to say something's a piss take because like usually when a critic says, oh, it's a piss take, like it's meant to diss the band. But is this supposed to be like a genuine cover or is this something supposed to be something that's wacky and fun and goofy? And the fact that I don't know, does that mean it was poorly executed or does that mean it's great art?
Man, I'm really sorry I didn't listen to this. Now you must have added this last minute because I swear I actually looked at the stories this week.
Yeah, but yeah, or something.
Yeah, and at what time?
Like 2 o'clock today.
Oh wow, I didn't look at the stuff till like 9 o'clock. I must have looked at an older version. Anyway, I didn't listen to it. I don't know.
It's a strange one for a couple reasons. I mean, for one, it's just no. First of all, I want to correct something that I said earlier. Hot Water Music had a EP that came out in 2019 called Shake Up the Shadows that I am completely oblivious to its existence and I feel like a dumb shit. So oh. I should go listen to that. So I mean I'm a Hot Water Music fan from let's say their second era, kind of like their early Epitaph era. I can't claim that I was around when they were you know, playing Swamp Emo for all the No Idea kids before that. And they were always a band that was not overly serious, but not in a way that is, not necessarily, and that's a criticism, but like Hot Water Music's stuff at the time was meant to be, it was not meant to be whimsical or goofy or anything like that. So this, for better or worse, and I guess the question is it for better or worse? This projects a lot more kind of playfulness than most of their catalog has, you know, ever shown. And even if you look at like songs that the band's covered before, they're usually not tackling songs that are going to like lend themselves to having a bunch of silly fun with. Like Hot Water Music sticks pretty close to, I think, like the kind of artist that let's say either were contemporaries or directly influenced them with the bands that they've covered. I'm thinking like Turbo Negro's Prince of the Rodeo is one of their covers. They covered a whole bunch of Alkaline Trio songs that was related to the split that they did. They had like a cover of Clampdown by the Clash. One of my favorite covers by them that's been like Dreamworld by Midnight Oil, but like none of those songs allowed them to like goof it up. And this is pretty goofy. And I don't think it's necessarily because they have JR from Less Than Jake involved, because you kind of need the horns to make this work. But it is a curiosity. I'm gonna leave it at that. I did not find myself unhappy as I was listening to this, but I think that was because I hadn't thought about Sir Duke in a long time. And all of a sudden it struck me when I'm listening to this. I'm like, oh yeah, Sir Duke is so fun. So I think that maybe the lesson here is like, go listen to Stevie Wonder. It's a weird one, John. It's a weird one.
It's a weird one.
All right, moving on though. I think people should go listen to it. Judge for yourselves. Write us email. Is this cover silly or is it you know, would you buy it on a 7-inch Punk News Podcast listenership? Let us know. Then if you will, John will press some for you. All right. So John's buddy Alice Cooper, he's going to release a new album on February 26th of 2021 on the Ear Music label. It's called Detroit Stories, and it focuses on the city's late 60s and 70s hard rock heyday. The release was produced by Cooper's longtime collaborator, Bob Ezrin. Ezrin released a statement, which I'd like to point out that John spelt statement because spell checkers are not punk. And it says, we recorded...
Yeah, but listen, I spell checker's named Adam White, so anytime the spell checker named Adam White wants to activate and actually contribute to the site, well, that's great and fine.
I contribute just fine by showing up here and you know, criticizing several days after the fact that it could have mattered. All right, so Ezrin said, we recorded with Wayne Kramer, who's of course guitarist and writer of the MC5, Johnny B. Badanjek, drums from the legendary Detroit Wheels, Paul Rudolph, the legendary Detroit jazz and R&B bassist, as well as the Motor City Horns and other local musicians. We recorded at Rust Belt Studios in Royal Oak. This was a made in Detroit, for Detroit, by Detroit denizens. So there you go. Lots of Detroit involved in this. So the album includes originals and covers of bands from Detroit and bands that are associated with the city. Several tracks were previously recorded for the Breadcrumbs EP, but you can find the full listing, track listing, over on Punk News right now. There's 15 tracks on this sucker. John, as an Alice Cooper fan, and Tom, as a Michiganite, what's your thoughts here?
Well, Alice has put out a lot of albums in the past 10 years. And they've been okay. And the problem is, it feels like he wrote a lot of them in like 2 weeks, and he's like, time to write an album. So he just got like a riff, and then he just like sang like whatever came to his head over top of it and put it together for an okay song. Nothing within the past 10 years has been really horrible, but it hasn't been that great either. And one often gets opinions like Alice, instead of putting out something every year, which it is cool that you put out something every year, why don't you take 2 years and you know, really work some of this stuff together and really make a strong, strong album instead of just putting out albums to put out albums. But he didn't seem to care. Meanwhile, live, he's been amazing live. Although he did put out an EP called the Breadcrumbs EP, which was four covers and two originals. And honestly, that was very, very good. And I've been listening to that, not even just as an Alice Cooper fan. Like, if this was just anybody and I heard this EP, I'd be like, damn, that's a good EP. So it's really the best thing he's done in a long time. The amusing thing is Alice like isn't even from Detroit. They're from Arizona, then they moved to LA, then they moved to Detroit, but they weren't in Detroit that long, and they moved back to LA. But he's always claimed Detroit as like his hometown, which is kind of cool. You know, a lot of like awesome, some of the best hard rock ever came from Detroit or Michigan. You know, Stooges, MC5, Mitch Ryder, all that pretty heavy stuff. So honestly, like, if that's what it takes to rejuvenate him, I'm psyched for it, because the Breadcrumbs EP was very, very good. The one thing that I'm concerned about is he's been doing a lot of covers lately. Like, he's got that Hollywood Vampires band, which actually was very cool. They put out one covers album, which was excellent. Probably like my second or third favorite. It's my third favorite covers album ever. They put out a new album that was not that good. It was only had like three covers on it. But the Breadcrumbs EP was mostly covers. And there's at least a few covers on this. The opening track is a Lou Reed cover, Rock and Roll, which is cool. I actually think when bands open up albums with covers, it's a very ballsy move. And if it's a good album, then it's awesome that they do that. But if it's a weak album, then it's a real backfire. I just hope it's not too many covers. I really want some originals with this, a lot of originals with this. But if, you know, the Detroit sound and the Detroit, and it is cool that he's got a bunch of Detroit musicians on this. If that's what it takes to make a great Alice Cooper album, I'm all for it. So I'm excited. I hope it's going to be cool. I pre-ordered it, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, he's put out a lot of okay albums in the past 10, even 20 years, you know? So I know he still has greatness in him. Will this be what sparks it once again? I hope so. Also, I will say Alice is the king of promo shots. I was looking at the promo photo that we hear at Have a Punk News. I'm like, man, that is such a great promo photo. But I'm like, but there's one promo photo that I really love. Who's the artist that has like the best promo photo ever? And I'm thinking about it, and I remember, oh, it's the Alice Cooper Billion Dollar Babies promo photo, which is the Alice Cooper band with a bunch of cocaine, money, rabbits, babies, and dollars stacked around them. And it is without question the best press photo ever.
He hasn't aged much because he wears the makeup and dyes his hair as black as pitch. Yeah. So if you look at the promo photos from like 1995, and the ones from like 2018. And he's in his 70s now, early 70s.
Yeah.
But it's funny, John. It's that great paradox, you know, because I feel like creatively he is sort of running on fumes. And these cover albums have done a lot to rejuvenate his career. But the fact of the matter is, people who go see him live don't really want to hear new stuff. What does he play? A couple of new songs, maybe? I don't think he needs to put out new music. I'm not sure what the motivation is. I'm sure he's not selling crazy amounts of these things. Maybe it's maybe he is still kind of, even in his 70s, motivated to be creative, but I'm not sure. But yeah, people go see him, they just want to hear stuff from the 70s anyway. So he just needs to keep putting on a killer live show and play golf in the off season.
That is a great question. Is he putting out albums because he's like, I'm so excited to make. Honestly, I think he just likes playing music with the band, and I think that's a part of it. But also,
I think he still got that 70s mindset, like what he came out of.
I think that's what it is. It's like, you know, in the 70s, like literally the 70s, the record labels like, we want two albums a year. You know, Judas Priest, Queen, yeah. Elton John, Bowie. They were all putting out like two albums a year.
It's amazing because the Alice Cooper band put out, what, like seven albums in 6 years or something, and it was the best stuff.
Right. So I think – and Lemmy, same thing with Lemmy. You know, like, yeah, Motorhead would put out an album every year. It's like, well, no, dude, who's listening to this, you know? But yeah, so – yeah. I think
he would have If you would have made half as many, they could have been classic.
Yeah, right, right.
Hmm.
It's sort of basic question about like what should an artist do when they are like when you're old enough and I guess established enough that being a musician is your job, but you're I guess you're old enough that whatever anyone's going to consider your classic era is well behind you, not necessarily because you've lost it, but just because like you are now older and like the culture has moved on a little bit from whenever you were in the middle of it. So if you're in that position, like, what do you do? Do you create things with one eye on, like, how does this slot in to my catalog of classic stuff? Or do you just do? Is it just, like, go into the plant kind of thing? Like, put on your hard hat and go do?
The thing with Alice Cooper, Adam, is his classic era, I think you could argue, was coming to an end around the time I was born. And I'm getting dangerous, you know, I'm hurling towards the half century mark. And in the 80s, as far as like worrying about his catalog, he put out so much garbage. His catalog is so spotty once he went solo that I don't think that's really even an issue. I think he threw out a lot of things. And I think that was during his drinking era.
Yeah, like I'm never sure.
But I mean, yeah, his legacy is as a live act at this point, I think, more than his recorded stuff.
Well, yeah, because like I'm never sure how I'm supposed to process one of these like extremely entrenched artists that has a catalog of you know 20, 30, 40 records or something like that. Like are you even supposed to worry about it? Like I think about like Neil Young a lot. And I read an article the other day where someone went and ranked like all 40 Neil Young records because it's I don't know, it's his birthday today or yesterday or something like that. So this was one of those, clickbait article that someone put out, right? Where it was like, we're going to rank all 40 Neil Young records. And just like,
whoever ranked those didn't actually listen to them, right? I mean, there's no way.
They made some strange decisions. But part of it is that like when you have an artist that's been around for that long, you stop thinking in terms of individual records and you start thinking in terms of like eras, right? Where like Neil Young would have like four or five records that all came out within the same like 5 years of each other, and they all represented like a period within that artist's existence where they were doing something in this or that way. Or you look at like Dylan had like three or four records when he was in his like crazy religious period, right, where he was like Dylan the born again Christian,
yep, right? I think it was three. Yep.
Yeah, so you're not going to go and like you're not going to go and decide like, oh, is like Dylan born again Christian record number 3, how does that compare to some record he made in, you know, 2005?
Yeah, how does that compare to Blown in the Wind?
Yeah, like it's a strange thing to have to rank, and I get that like people like making lists, but yeah, I don't know. I'm never sure what I'm supposed to think about that, because if you had an artist that had like 3 records and then they waited 30 years and then released the 4th, then everyone's going to jump on it and look at like, oh, how did that compare to the thing that they made 30 years ago? But if you just like just churned out stuff for good or evil for the past 30 years, then it's like, whatever. It's a strange.
Here's the Alice Cooper solo. This is the Alice Cooper solo, not the band timeline. Album 75, album 76, live album 77, studio album 77, studio album 78, studio album 80, studio album 81, 82, 83. Then he goes into rehab. Then he comes back, studio album 86, 87, 89, 91, 94.
89 was the classic trash. That was actually pretty good.
Live album 97, live album 2000, album 2000. Album 2001, 2003, 2006, 2008, 2000, live album 2011, live album 2014, album 2015, album 2017, live album 2018, album 2019, and new album 2021. The dude, he's been putting in the work, let me tell
you. Yeah. That's a lot of stuff there. So I'm going to play a song now, because I'm going to seg right from that conversation into a totally esoteric pandemic era record that I think is fun and I kind of want to talk about here. So are you aware, John, of a Actually, let's get here. Let's get my notes up in front of me.
Is Chappell one of these artists that you irrationally hate, or do you like Alice?
No, Alice is one of these artists that I never got into as a kid because I thought they were a cartoon character, and it didn't. I heard like, you know, the three or four like classic rock radio hits or whatever, that just because that was all anyone ever listened to, I think, when I was a kid, was just like, you know, classic rock stuff. And none of those songs I particularly endeared to me. They all seemed kind of silly. So because of that, it was just something I wrote off entirely until at a certain point a few years ago, you required that I go back and listen to, I don't know, whatever the red one is.
Yeah.
Killers with a Snake. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a snake. That was, again, and it was fine.
So but, good.
But I'm fine. So, yeah, it was fine. And but I'm so I'm so outside of the of it's like I'm a space alien, right? It's like I'm so far outside of that whole culture around him and his whole story and stuff like that that I can't sit down and listen to it right now without part of my brain going like, what are you going to do with this information? Like you're not going to go turn around and really get into this and go listen to 500 different Alice Cooper records. So just listen to this and make John happy and move on. Probably that.
You only rob yourself, Adam. You're not robbing me.
I mean, hey, you know what?
Listen, if you don't like Killers, it's not for you. It's fine. I mean, if that one doesn't, if you can't get into that, you're not getting into it. That's it.
I mean, I can't feel anything anymore because I've been trapped in my basement for a year. So I everything is the same. Okay, here is. So we talked about Dylan's religious period really briefly there. We mentioned it. So the record after Dylan's religious period ended was a record that he put out called Infidels. Now,
great album.
So this that I'm about to bring up is about the most esoteric isolation era home recording thing that I think I've heard about from anyone, because you can't even explain what it is without giving like a three paragraph history lesson here. So here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Infidels. So when that record came out, and this record would have been 1983, Dylan went on to Letterman, and it said in March of 1984, he went out and he played three songs from the Infidels record on Late Night with David Letterman. And when he appeared with members of the LA punk band, The Plugs, P-L-U-G-Z, backing him as his band on Letterman. And the songs, the renditions of the Infidels songs that he played during the Letterman appearance has actually become something of a infamous curiosity within like the, I don't know, like the Dylan universe. It's like something people talk about a lot, because the versions of those Infidels songs that they played were totally charged up and different and really rock and roll. And really it was considered one of like Dylan's most entertaining performances on TV ever. And it is something that like a lot of people that are Dylan nerds are, you know, are really, really into is that clip. So that is the pretext behind what I'm about to play for you here. So, at some point this year, artist that I follow a lot, Niagara area artist, Daniel Romano, who used to be in Attack in Black, which is a punk pop punk band 10 years ago, and now has kind of like a weird, crazy alt country career. So Danny is one of these home recording savants where he basically has a barn somewhere not too far from where I live, where he just goes in there and just records constantly. And he has put out this year 10 LPs. And all of them, and none of them are crap either. Like 10 LPs that are like fully realized.
Take that, Alice Cooper.
Records, right?
Yeah.
This year, he's, you know, he had one that he recorded with Jonah Falco and Mike Halchuk from Fucked Up. He had one that he recorded with Steve Lampke from the Constantines. He had a bunch that he just recorded with his own band. Some of them are him solo. Some of them are them doing, you know, remote recording stuff. Some of them, you know, they've all put on masks and went into the studio. But like a madman, he put out 10 records. One of those records that he put out this year was he got his touring band together and they covered Dylan's Infidels in its entirety, but they covered it as if they were Dylan and the Plugs on Letterman. So it is not simply a cover of Infidels. It is a cover of Infidels in the style of the 1984 LA punk group, the Plugs, during that performance, basically extrapolating what the rest of the album would have sounded like had they played that entire record on Letterman. Now, is that not the nerdiest fucking thing that you could come up with? That is exactly the kind of thing that I imagine a band driving on, like, the longest, most boring section of their tour is just coming up with dumb shit to talk about with each other in the van. That is, I can only imagine that is the genesis of this project. But anyways, so I'm going to play you one of the songs from this record. The name of this record is completely ridiculous in and of itself. So Danny's touring band is called The Outfit. So the name of this record is Daniel Romano's Outfit Do, bracket, what could have been, bracket, Infidels by Bob Dylan and the Plugs. So, yeah. So here we go. This is going to be a song from that thing that you can find on Bandcamp right now. I'm going to play, which of these songs am I going to play? I had it in front of me a second ago.
What's the big hit? The reggae track, Joker Man.
Okay, we'll play Joker Man. Sure. So this is Joker Man from Danny and his band pretending that they are Dylan and the Plugs in a fictional performance on Letterman in 1984 that didn't actually exist, but done in 2020 because there was a pandemic or something. I don't know. Here you go.
Standing on the water, casting your bread, while the eyes of the idol with the iron head are glowing. Distant ships sailing into the mist. You were born with a snake that broke your fist. Joker Man.
Whew, I'm exhausted. Okay, we're back. So we're going to talk about a few other things.
So interestingly enough, since we're already down this crazy rabbit hole. So my mother was a bit of a Dylan fan. And I actually have in my record collection, I have two of the Born Again era Bob Dylan records. I have one that's called Saved and one that's called Slow Train Coming. And on another note, I've never been a Grateful Dead fan, never cared about the Grateful Dead at all. But Dylan, in some sort of a strange rebellious act against his former Born Again stage, actually re-recorded a bunch of those songs on an album called Dylan and the Dead, which is the only Bob Dylan thing, or the only Grateful Dead thing I have in my record collection. I have several Bob Dylan things. So anyway, that was my little sidetrack
I have a more fascinating fact than that. And that is that my roommate in college,
are we having a dick measuring contest?
Yes,
now,
we are. My roommate in college listens to the Dylan and the Dead CD all the fucking time. And it took all of my power not to use it to cut his head off.
It's not even that great of an album.
It's not.
Well, the funny thing is I was thinking the Plugs did Pablo Picasso from the Repo Man soundtrack, but that was the Modern Lovers. Anyway.
I can't think of what the Plugs themselves did, but like La Bamba, I don't remember punk bands.
Yeah, I think Electrify Me was like their big song, and La Bamba, their cover of La Bamba.
I think the Plugs are the most famous for their cover of Pablo Picasso, which was actually a semi-hit off the Repo Man soundtrack.
So are you sure about that, Janet? So that was the cover of the Modern Lovers. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, the Plugs became more famous when they became Los Lobos, who are still around today.
Oh, yeah. They were the same guys. Okay, I didn't realize that. Okay. That L.A. scene was very diverse and very artsy. It was sort of like New York before the hardcore stuff moved in.
It is funny how many of the early punk bands, though, just a few just became straight up mainstream rock bands that are pretty boring. You know, the Plugs are cool, but Los Lobos, I could take it or leave.
A book I would highly recommend, because I enjoyed it so much, it actually made me like just that I wasn't there when it was happening. But it was John Doe's biography. It's called Under the Big Black Sun. And it's an interesting biography in that he has his friends all write chapters. So very little of it is actually written by John Doe. But it talks about that early scene. And that early LA scene was very artsy-fartsy. Are you laughing, John? Are you laughing at me?
John Doe, we want to pay you a bunch of money to write your own autobiography. Let me bring in my...
It's actually a sequel to it. I haven't got that yet.
It sounds like a really easy way to get it. It's by me, but everyone else...
Well, it's a great, I got to say, it's a great book. It's called Under the Big Black Sun, John Doe. It's a great book. You should read it. But anyway,
more interlude.
Anyway, my point being that LA scene was much like the original New York scene. It was very diverse, very artsy-fartsy. And then the hardcore kids came in from the beaches and the suburbs, the TSOLs and the, you know, Ill Reputes and the bands like that. And it chased all the original punks out of the scene, and they went, they didn't like the violence and the other crap that was going on. What became punk? It's interesting. Check it out.
How perceptive, Thomas. You were suggesting that the reason a lot of the first wave punkers kind of became mainstream or whatever was because they got checked out. I think that's an incredible argument. I think you could really make
it interesting. Book. You should read it, John. It's interesting. But anyway.
But has anyone mentioned that John Doe is a weenie? And maybe the reason he got chased out is because he's a weenie. Has anyone suggested that?
I saw him in Grand Rapids when he was playing with the Flesh Eaters, like that lineup that made that one album in 81 that had the guys from X and the guy from the Blasters. And for whatever reason, that classic lineup went on tour, and they were in Grand Rapids, and I was sitting in a restaurant like eating a burger, and John Doe walked by. And I got to tell you, he still sort of strikes an image of the – he still resonates as a rock star. He's got to be in his 60s. But anyway.
Cool.
Adam, Infidels is so good. I love that album. Joker Man, You're the Neighborhood Bully.
I never heard it. Apparently my mother gave him up after he renounced his faith.
She's the opposite of most people then.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, she likes the real early stuff, I know. Like the really, the you know, the folk stuff, but anyway, I don't know, whatever.
All right, speaking of people who are 60 years old, Australia's The Chats. They've announced they're a very young band. That was a bad seg, I'm sorry. So they've announced a new 7-inch. And there's a video out for the 7-inch that's kind of delightful that you should see. So the 7-inch is called, or sorry, the 7-inch has the A side of AC/DC CD, and then a cover of AC/DC's Rocker on side B. So the A side has a video that again is delightful and wacky and fits the Chats kind of crazy Australian Buzzcocks vibe that they have going on, and you know, and pays homage to some of their countrymen. John, this is fun.
Yeah, it is fun. There's I guess, hey, the track in of itself is fun. Is it super banging? Nah, I wouldn't say it's as good as their best stuff, but it's cool. It's fun. Two things to pick apart here. A, can the Chats survive without funny videos? That is, would they be as big as they are without the funny videos? Because that's definitely how I got hit to them, was these hilarious videos they have. This video is kind of funny. And if you know AC/DC, they're actually referencing two or three specific AC/DC videos here, particularly Let Them Be Rock is a big reference to the video here. Second thing is this kind of like a shot to stay relevant, if you will, and that it's a novelty track, but arguably a lot of Chats tracks are novelty tracks. But is this them like tactically saying, pay attention to us, you know, so we're not even relying on our own selves right now. We're saying, boys in AC/DC, great. Or is it a clever statement? Three, will the buzz of the Chats survive the coronavirus? Because they were just building and building and building, and they had this huge tour planned, and it was sold out, and bam, coronavirus cut it all down, you know. Week before it's supposed to start, I think.
So I like the Chats. I'm cool with the Chats. But the truth of the matter is, I think the coronavirus is less likely to kill them than the fact that they're a one-trick pony.
Mm.
The Chats are a band where they're going to have the problem of the law of diminishing returns. You know the law of diminishing returns, John? Like you eat a hot dog at a baseball game, you're like, oh man, that hot dog was so good. I'm gonna go get another one. You eat that second hot dog, you're like, eh, it was pretty good. By the time you eat the third one, it's like you're sick of hot dogs. I'm afraid that's what's gonna happen with the Chats, because mm-hmm. they really are a one trick pony. That being said, I'm not sick of them yet, but I don't know. I don't know where they go.
One trick pony. Like, could they put out like an Artie Fartie record, or could they pull a Rancid and do a straight hardcore record to stay interesting?
I think the only thing they could do is maybe get better haircuts.
That's part of the, that's part of the reason why people pay attention. Like if people remember, the first video that really buzzed was I'm on Smoko.
Yeah, great song.
Who are these Australians that look like they're from like 1983? You know what I mean?
And I think I think there was an element to that. Like with that song caught on without the video. I don't know. I don't think so. But hey, John, breaking news. It wasn't the Plugs that did Pablo Picasso. It was Burning Sensations on the man soundtrack. Fake news, John. Fake you and your fake news spreading. You and your Pennsylvania people.
Damn, bro. Damn.
Fake news.
Aren't the Plugs? Oh no, the Plugs do
El Plugs Pop. Have two. They do Secret Agent Man.
Secret Agent Man.
Yes.
I like that. I was totally wrong. Anyway,
there you go.
Great.
But listen, hey, at least we corrected it before we had to be corrected by, you know, these know-it-all listeners.
Great. The listeners have the internet.
One of the best soundtracks ever.
That's true. Well, so do I. I wouldn't have remembered it otherwise. Anyway,
listen, I got to speaking of bands covering other bands and stuff. This is relevant to like almost nothing. But I learned this mind blowing fact today. One, you guys know the Partisans, that like UK punk band from like 78, 79.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they were never like huge, but you know some people love them.
Sure.
One of the Partisans was one of the main guys in Gavin Rosdale. That's Bush, right? Isn't Gavin? Is he Bush? Gavin Rosdale?
Yeah. He's the only.
Yeah, one of the Partisans.
He's married to Gwen Stefani.
One of the Partisans is one of the main original Bush guys and wrote like all the big hits.
Really?
Yes. How do you like that? That blew my mind.
Interesting, boy. That doesn't speak highly of the Partisans.
It really doesn't.
Everything's zen. I don't think so. I don't believe that Elvis is dead. No, I don't believe that Elvis is dead. Yo, whatever he says, something about Elvis being dead.
Adam, was Gwen Stefani right to divorce Gavin Rosdale, and did Gavin Rosdale take a good thing for granted?
Isn't she married to a country guy now?
Yeah, some guy, Tim, some famous country guy, Tim something.
Tim something. Tim
Johnny
something.
Cash. That's a favorite. Yeah. Willie Nelson. Those are the only favorite.
Tim Tow Truck.
Hank Williams the senior.
I think he died in the '50s, but maybe Junior.
I feel that Gwen was probably had like a prenup that said like once Gavin cut his grunge hair and
still. Oh, he's still incredibly handsome. She's not dumping him because of his looks.
No,
because he's a younger guy. I mean, his music's crap, but he's very handsome. I can't take that away from him.
Okay, we'll give him that. All right. What else are we talking about? We talked about the
chats.
Like
the George Clooney of third wave grunge.
Who else? I don't have my notes anymore. My notes are gone. John, what the fuck else are we talking about?
It was nothing.
Adam, pick a side, the chats, thumbs up or thumbs down.
I'm down with it. I'm okay if a band's shtick is that there might be too much shtick. I'd like to see that play out. Then I don't know what the alternative is. I'm okay. I can deal with the shtick right now. I'm good. That's cool.
There you go,
John. Let's talk about this one track from an 80s punk band here that cropped up in our lives.
Oh, this is the story. This is the story of the week.
Okay. Well, anyways, so one of our writers, Mike Musilli, he's like, "Hey, John, can I debut this track of punk news? It's by a band called Kirk and the Jerks from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, very close to where the Amish live, and they put out two cassettes, one in the early 80s and one in the early 90s. The band's called Kirk and the Jerks. And I said, sure, whatever. I don't really care. And I put the story together and we debuted this song called Hang On to the Dream. And frankly, it freaking rocks. It's a little bit more glammy than I thought it would be. It kind of reminded me of Eater, the English band Eater. And I just think it's a great track. I do think this song would have been a little better if it had a little bit more production. This is definitely 80s hard production,
no
budget production. But I have a feeling I might get this. I have a feeling this might be the band's only great song, to tell you the truth.
I scoped the pre-order too, John, but maybe can I Spotify it first?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So anyways, you know, there are a million, well, not a million, but thousands and thousands of awesome bands and songs that no one knows about. And this is a band I had never even heard of that, honestly, this track, it kicks ass.
Killer.
It is fun. You should go check it out, people, because you probably have not heard it, because it's pretty damn obscure.
No, I never even heard of the band. I love finding old stuff like that from bands, you know, that I never knew of. I love it. It's great.
But I agree with you, Tom. When you do that dance, when you look for like super obscure stuff, there's always the threat of like burning yourself out, because the fact is most of it is not terrible, but it's certainly not great. Most of it is just mediocre.
There's a reason why most of it is, not.
You know what I mean? Ridiculous.
Yep. No, I agree. But that was fun, and you're right. I mean, I probably should check it out because of. I have definitely done that where I'm like, oh, that song's so cool, but of course they're going to put their best foot forward, right?
Yeah,
and the rest of it might sound like the microphone was in the, you know, bass player's ass when they recorded it.
Interesting recording technique.
Well, I mean, I'm talking like, you know, round end in, not out. I mean, it's yeah, but it's it was cool. It's always fun to find something like that.
All right, well, I'm gonna make like the worst seg into this, and I'm just not going to do it because it's. Just it's crude.
That's an unkind seg, Adam. I know the seg you were going to make. That is unkind.
I know it is, and I didn't want to be unkind. I mean, people can figure out what it would be. So, all right. So Mike Yerg, who is one of the loveliest people in the universe, so he has gone and released a full album cover for some reason of Lou Reed's avant-garde album Metal Machine Music. So the original the infamous Lou Reed LP was a 64-minute single track composed entirely of feedback and guitar effects layering on top of each other. Mikey's version thereof is a merciful 16 minutes long, but it's still 16 minutes long. And you can hear it.
No, it's not, Adam. It's a full thing.
Is it the full thing? I thought it was 16. Oh, no, that's just the fucking first track of it. Never mind. Sorry.
Oh, he usually divides it up into tracks? Oh, sellout.
Yeah, sorry. No, okay. Yeah, sorry. I was looking at the Bandcamp in bed there. No. Mikey recorded everything. So it exists. It is on Bandcamp. Yeah, it's split into four tracks, each of which are about 15, 16 minutes long. I was actually going to use this story as the lead in to my Infidels thing, because it is very much a contemporary artist taking a prior piece of music and just deciding to just do it. So in this case, it's Mikey Erg doing Metal Machine music. If you're not aware of Mikey Erg, he fronted a rather delightful pop punk band called the Ergs that everyone, adored back in the early punk news days. They were a Dirt Nap Records band. But anyways, I love Mikey, but do we have to listen to this?
Well, that's the thing. Do we even want to listen to the Lou Reed version? Like, the Lou Reed version is literally an hour of just feedback. And like, for a hot minute, I was getting into Boris. And it's like, all right, man, 10 minutes of feedback. It's like, yeah, sonic texture. You know, this is artistic statement without, being confined to, the 4/4 drum beat. But after a while, it's like, who am I trying to – like what am I taking from this? As an artistic statement – I think Metal Machine music is very interesting and cool as an artistic statement, as something to actually listen to. It's like, what's the point? So I actually think it's hilarious and funny that Mikey recorded a cover of it, because, I mean, the original by itself is inessential and it's unlistenable by design almost, and so to cover something like that is an interesting statement of itself. I would really like to, like, Mikey Erg is a massive music fan, and he's one of these guys that — I'm not dissing Mikey, I'm complimenting him — like, every album is his favorite album. Beatles Let It Be, it's my favorite album. Rolling Stones Exile Main Street, it's my favorite album. Miles Davis Bitches Brew, it's my favorite album. I would really love to have an open conversation with him. Is, does he genuinely love listening to Metal Machine music, and does he listen to it all the way through? And of course, to do an entire album worth, an hour long cover of it, I guess you kind of have to, right? I mean, that's a lot of work.
I mean, you've got to definitely study the original to the point where you can go in and reproduce it. And I guess you can't just charitably argue that if you make an hour of grinding noise, then that counts, right? So yeah, it's. I mean, I can maybe see where one would approach it if they approach it as, say, like a piece of ambient music, or people are into there's all kinds of tape weirdos and stuff like that are into ambient music, but like, it's not.
They are, but I don't know if I've ever met anybody that genuinely listens to like ambient music. Like, I know people buy it and collect it, but I mean, I would really like to know how much. Like, I would love to know if you could divide the number of ambient records sold for a certain artist by played by sold, and do the same thing with, say, like the Interrupters or something. I would love to see the difference in ratios between those two. You know what I mean?
And the fact of the matter is, you have sort of championed like Dwid Hellion's noise music, right?
Yeah, but true.
Well, but okay. So let me tell a brief anecdote here to explain my relationship to this Mikey Erg thing. My wife is terrible about, when we're sitting around watching TV or something, like letting her phone ring out, like watching a video or playing music or something while everyone else is trying to watch something. And we've Jeopardy binge lately, because Alex Trebek, the greatest Canadian of them all. No offense, Adam.
No, hey.
So we're literally just always like, what are you doing? Turn your sound off, But I put this on while I was doing my research. I'm air quoting right now, my research for the podcast. And you should have seen the room turn on me and just staring at me like, turn that off, turn it off. And I'm just like, no, I want to check this out for a minute. I made it 31 seconds. I mean, it might be fun. It might be funny, but it's unlistenable. So anyway, sorry, Mike. Yeah, I'm going to call this one a miss.
Tom, is that a reference?
Not really, not intentionally.
Because that's a reference that Mike Yerk specifically would get, even if it was a reference. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, anyways.
Anyway, not for me.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure who it's for. I mean, again, that's not meant as an insult to Mike.
I like that little 7-inch did where they made thrash songs, the thrash compactor 7-inch. I like that one.
So here we are. We are at the end of another week in the unending year. Do we want to play a song, Tom?
Yes, but I haven't thought of one.
Oh, well, do you want to think of one and then play us out?
Yes. Because of the Halloween season, even though Adam is slacking and we're so far behind, I got this little 7-inch that I was excited to get. It came out in 1989. It was a band from Detroit called the Almighty Lumberjacks of Death, because why not?
Yeah.
And they had a great song called Motor City Trick or Treat. So I would like to, even though this will probably be like a month past Halloween.
Oh, 3 months.
Whatever. Anyway.
Nothing matters.
Episode 515, like the great Who. I would like to play the Almighty Lumberjacks of Death, Motor City Trick or Treat.